This Reformation audio resource is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. Any free resources, as well as our complete mail order catalog containing classic and contemporary Puritan and Reformed books, CDs, and much more, at great discounts or on the web at www.swrb.com. Also, please consider, pray, and act upon the important truths found in the following quotation by Charles Spurgeon. As the Apostle says to Timothy, so also he says to everyone, give yourself to reading. He who will not use the thoughts of other men's brains proves that he has no brains of his own. You need to read. Renounce as much as you will all light literature, but study as much as possible sound theological works, especially the Puritanic writers and expositions of the Bible. The best way for you to spend your leisure is to be either reading or praying. And now, to SWRB's reading of The Economy of the Covenants Between God and Man, which we hope you find to be a great blessing, and which we pray draws you nearer to the Lord Jesus Christ. For he is the way, the truth, and the life, and no man cometh unto the Father but by him. John 14:6. We continue this reading on page 115 of Herman Witsius's The Economy of the Covenants Between God and Man. He is treating of the sacraments of the covenant of works, chapter 6, subsection 23. I go a step further and say that there is no absurdity should such a sacrament be appointed whose use should consist in a religious abstinence, nor should those learned men, if consistent with themselves, be averse to this opinion. The deluge, say they, from which Noah was preserved, must needs be reckoned among the types. The use of the waters in respect to Noah consisted in this, that they were neither to touch him and his to their hurt, nor force themselves into the ark in which he was shut up. The waters of the Red Sea likewise signified the same thing in the same manner to Israel. Nay, what may seem strange, these learned men say, that the first sacrament of the covenant of grace was, quote, the ejectment of Adam out of paradise, and the barring up his access to the tree of life, close quote. Or, as one is pleased to express himself, quote, the first sacrament was the tree of life, which though at first it regarded the covenant of works, and the exclusion from it was the punishment of fallen man, nevertheless, that very exclusion was at the same time a sign of the grace and goodness of God. Close quote. I would beg of those very learned men to explain in what the sacramental use of the tree of life was to have consisted under the covenant of grace, after man was expelled paradise, and that tree was no longer able to be in his view. There is here no other use but a mystical abstinence and deprivation, and thus we imagine we have fully answered the first argument. Subsection 24. Let us now consider the second, and we say, it is not inconsistent with the nature of sacraments to seal death and condemnation to those who unduly and irregularly use them. For the covenant of God with man is ratified not only by the promises, but also by certain threatenings belonging to it. But sacraments are the seals of the whole covenant, not excepting the threatenings to the profane abusers of them. When a man partakes of the sacraments, he comes under an oath and curse, and makes himself liable to punishment if he deals treacherously. To say nothing of the sacraments of the covenant of works, the very sacraments of the covenant of grace are the savor of death and to death to hypocrites and profane persons, who in the bread and wine of the Eucharist eat and drink damnation to themselves, as 1 Corinthians 11:27-29 says. But it is not true that the tree of knowledge sealed only death, for it also sealed life and happiness. It was the tree of knowledge not only of evil, but of good, learned men themselves acknowledge, while they write that, quote, had Adam obeyed, he would upon his trial have come to the knowledge and sense of his good to which he was called, and had a natural desire after, even eternal life and consummate happiness. Close quote. Whence we conclude that notwithstanding these reasonings, we may justly reckon the tree of knowledge among the sacraments of the covenant of works. Chapter 7 of the First Sabbath, Subsection 1. We said that the first Sabbath was the fourth sacrament of the covenant of works. In order to treat somewhat more fully on this, it will not be improper to make it to the subject of the whole chapter. Moses gives us the history of it. Genesis 2, verses 2 and 3, in these words, quote, and on the seventh day God ended his work, which he had made, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work, which he had made. And God blessed the seventh day, and sanctified it, because that in it he had rested from all his work, which God created and made. End quote. The more fully to understand these words, and from them to answer our design, we shall distinctly discuss these three things. First, inquire whether what is here said about sanctifying and blessing the seventh day ought to be applied to that first day, which immediately followed upon the 6 days of the creation, and which was the first that shone on the works of God and completed, or whether it be necessary to have recourse to a prelepsis, or anticipation, by which we may look upon those things as spoken of the day on which many ages after the manna was given in the wilderness. Secondly, we shall explain the nature of that first Sabbath. Thirdly, and lastly, point out in what respect it was a sacrament. Subsection 2. There is no occasion to mention that the first of these points has been matter of great dispute among divines, without coming to any determination to this day. Nor do I choose to repeat what they have said. I shall only observe that perhaps the parties might easily agree, did we know that we are to understand by sanctifying and blessing the seventh day, mentioned by Moses, and which we shall presently consider. But if we suppose in general that God rested on the seventh day from his work, that is, not only desisted from creating new species of creatures, but acquiesced and took complacency in the work which he had now finished, especially in man, who was formed after his image, and furnished with those faculties by which he was enabled to acknowledge and celebrate the perfections of God, shining forth in his works, and that he set this his resting before man as a pattern, by which he would be taught to acquiesce in nothing but in God, for whom he was created, please himself in nothing but in glorifying God, which is the end of his creation. Moreover, that he sanctified this day, of which we are speaking, by commanding it to be employed by man for that sacred work, adding a promise that all that time thus employed by man should he highly blessed to him, should be highly blessed to him. If, I say, we thus in general suppose, as all these things are evidently truth, there is good hope that all equitable judges will allow that we adhere to the simplicity of the letter, and interpret the history, this history of Moses as the narrative of a thing done at that time, as the holy prophet was then describing. Subsection 3. I am glad to find the celebrated Cosius assents to this. His words are these on Genesis chapter 2, subsection 6, quote, some imagine that this verse, namely verse 3, is put by way of anticipation, but it is not probable that Moses, in recording this blessing and sanctification, did by no means speak concerning the original Sabbath, but only concerning the Jewish Sabbath. This is plainly doing violence to the text. if one day be understood which God blessed and sanctified, and another on which he rested from his work. Close quote. And the very eloquent Berman, though inclining to an anticipation, yet owns that, quote, the words of Moses may be understood of that perpetual Sabbath, the seventh day after the creation, which first saw the works of God perfected, and most auspiciously shown on in the world, whence it is said to be peculiarly blessed by God, and afterwards to be celebrated and sanctified by man for all ages to come. Close quote. Synopsis Theologicae, Liber 2, Chapter 5, Subsection 11. See the same author. In Latin, De Iconomia Foederum. De. My Latin's not very good. Gaining improvement, though. Subsection 208 and 209 of the same author. We shall say no more on this, as we could rather wish to see the Orthodox agreeing among themselves than contending with one another. And indeed this must be acknowledged, if we would properly explain in what manner this Sabbath was a sacrament of the covenant of works. Subsection 4. The best Hebrew authors, on whose authority those of the opposite opinion are wont to build upon, agree with us in this dispute. For, in the Talmud, they inquire, quote, why man was created on the evening of the Sabbath, close quote. And of the three reasons they give, this is the last, quote, that he might immediately enter on performing the command, close quote. The famous Ludovicus de Du, mentioning these words on Genesis chapter 1, verse 27, adds by way of explication, quote, for, since the Sabbath immediately succeeded the creation of man, he immediately entered on the command of sanctifying the Sabbath, close quote. Bio Hathurum, after various interpretations of this passage, also subjoins this other, quote, in the hour that he created the world, he blessed the Sabbath and the world, close quote. Jarkey also mentions this opinion, though himself was otherwise minded. Quote, what would the Sabbath, what would the world have been without rest? On the coming of the Sabbath came rest, and thus at length the work was finished and completed. Close quote. By which he intimates that the institution of the Sabbath was joined to the completing of the works of God. There are also some Jews who will have Psalm chapter 42, whose title is, quote, a psalm or song for the Sabbath day, close quote, to have been composed by Adam. For thus the Chaldee paraphrases, quote, a hymn and song which the first man said of the Sabbath, close quote. And Rabbi Levi, and Bereshit Rabbah, Section 22, at the end, quote, the first man spoke of this psalm, and from his time it was buried in oblivion, but Moses came and renewed it, close quote. Now I bring these testimonies to show that they speak too confidently who assert that it is running counter to the unanimous opinion of the Jews, for any to insist that the precept of the Sabbath was enjoined on the first man. Whoever wants more to this purpose may consult Selden de Jure Nature, etc. Liber 3, Chapter 13, Subsection 5. These things supposed, we are further to inquire in what the nature of the first Sabbath did consist. Here again, the learned run into very different opinions. I now take it to be my province to lay down such propositions to which it is to be hoped that the Orthodox, who are lovers of truth, will without difficulty give their assent. Subsection 6. We are to distinguish first between the rest of God and the rest of man, which God enjoined upon him and recommended by his own example. In this manner also Paul distinguishes in Hebrews chapter 4, verse 10, quote, "He also hath ceased from his own works, as God did from his," close quote. Subsection 7. The rest of God consisted not only in his ceasing from the work of any new creation, but also in that sweet satisfaction and delight he had in the demonstration of his own attributes and perfections, which were gloriously displayed in the work he had now finished, especially after he had added luster to this inferior world by bestowing upon it a most excellent inhabitant, who was to be a careful spectator and the herald and proclaimer of the perfections of his Creator, and in whom God himself beheld no small effulgence of his own glory. Wherefore it is said in Exodus 31, verse 17, quote, "And on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed," close quote, not as if he was fatigued, but as rejoicing in his work so happily completed, and in which he beheld what was worthy of his labor. Subsection 8. God, having rested on the seventh day, sanctified it, as well as by example and by precept. By example, inasmuch as he brought man, whom he had newly formed, to the contemplation of his works, and revealed to him both himself and his perfections, that he might love, thank, praise, and glorify him. And indeed, because God rested on the seventh day from all other works, and was only intent upon this, we may conclude that he sanctified it in a most extraordinary manner. He likewise sanctified it by precept, enjoining man to employ it in glorifying his Creator, quote, "to sanctify, as martyr, whom several commend," says well, "is to set apart something for the worship of God," close quote, as it is also taken here. And it was very justly observed by Calvin that it was the will of God his own example should be a perpetual rule to us. Rabbeinu Nissim, quoted by Abarbanel on the explication of the law, following 21, Colonel 3, is of the same opinion, quote, "And this is the sanctification of the Sabbath, that on the Sabbath day the soul of man be employed on nothing profane, but wholly on things sacred," close quote. Subsection 9. God's blessing the seventh day may be also taken in a twofold sense. First, his declaring it to be blessed and happy, as that in which he had peculiar pleasure to enjoy, by observing all his works in such order as to be, not only to himself, but to angels, as well as men, a most beautiful scene, displaying the glory of his perfections. This is what David says in Psalms chapter 104, verse 13, quote, "The glory of the Lord shall endure forever. The Lord shall rejoice in his works," close quote. Thus, God himself rejoiced on that day, and consequently blessed it. For as to curse a day is to abhor and detest it, as unfortunate and unhappy, as afflictive and miserable. See Job 2, verse 14, Jeremiah 20, verse 14. So by the rule of contraries, to bless a day is to rejoice in it, as delightful and prosperous. And indeed, what day more joyful, more happy, than that which saw the works of God perfected, and yet not stained by any sin, either of angels or probably of men? There has been none like it since that time, certainly not since the entrance of sin. Secondly, it was also a part of the blessing of this day, that God adjudged to man, if he religiously imitated the pattern of his own rest, the most ample blessings, and likewise in that very rest, the earnest of a most happy rest in heaven, of which more fully presently. Elegantly said the ancient Hebrew doctors that, the quote, the blessing and sanctifying of the Sabbath redound to the observers thereof, that they may be blessed and holy themselves. Close quote. Subsection 10. The rest here enjoined and recommended to man comprises chiefly these things. In general, that he shall abstain from every sin, through the whole course of his life, that giving nothing but uneasiness both to himself, that give nothing but uneasiness both to himself and his God. As the Lord complains in Isaiah 43, verse 22, quote, thou hast been weary of me, O Israel. And verse 24, quote, thou hast wearied me with thine iniquities, close quote. By sinning, we dreadfully transgress against the rest of God, who cannot delight in the sinner, of whom and his work to bear them, close quote. Oh, excuse me. And his work, he says in Isaiah, let me go back. By sinning, we dreadfully transgress against the rest of God, who cannot delight in the manner of whom and his work, he says, Isaiah chapter 1, verse 14, quote, they are a burthen to me, I am weary to bear them, close quote. There's a note at the bottom. Nota bene, this is not to be understood as if the blessed God could be wearied, but that only if such a thing was possible. Sin is such of a malignant nature that it would do it. Back to the text. But more especially, it is likewise man's duty, that as he is the concluding part of the works of God, and the last of all the creatures that came out of the hands of his Creator, not so to harass and fatigue himself about the creatures as to seek his happiness and good in them, but rather, by a holy elevation of mind, ascend to the Creator himself, and acquiesce in nothing short of the enjoyment of his unbounded goodness, of the imitation of the purest holiness, and of the expectation of the fullest rest and intimate union with his God. This indeed is the true and spiritual rest, always to be meditated upon, sought after, and to be observed by man. Subsection 11. Moreover, as man, even in the state of innocence, was to perform solemn acts of piety, together with his consort and children, and to be their mouth in prayer, thanksgiving, and praises, it was necessary at that time that laying aside all other occupations and all cares about what related to the support of natural life, and ordering those about him to rest, he might, without any hindrance from the body, religiously apply himself to this one thing, which I hope none of my brethren will refuse. And let's at least the celebrated Cosius readily allows it, whose words are these, in Latin, Summa Theologicae, chapter 21, subsection 10, or book 21, subsection 10, quote, it is right in itself, and a part of the image of God, that man, as often as possible, should employ himself in the worship of God, that is, laying aside the things pertaining to the body and its conveniences, be wholly taken up in those duties which become a soul, delighting in God, glorifying him, and celebrating his praise, and that too in the public assembly, for the common joy and edification of all. Subsection 12. After man had sinned, the remembrance of God's resting and sanctifying the seventh day ought to rouse him from his slowness and dullness in the worship of God, in order to spend every seventh day therein, laying aside for a while all other employments. But it will be better to explain this in Calvin's words, quote, God therefore first rested, and then he blessed that rest, that it might be ever afterwards holy among men. Or, he set apart each seventh day for rest, and his own example might be a standing rule. Close quote. Martyr speaks to the same purpose. Quote, hence men are put in mind that if the church enjoins them to set apart a certain day in the week for the worship of God, this is not altogether a human device, nor belongs only to the law of Moses, but likewise had its rise from hence, and is an imitation of God. Close quote. All this is also approved by Cosius, whose excellent words we will subjoin from the place just quoted, in subsection 12. Quote, the consequence of these things in the sinner is, that if encompassed with the infirmities of the flesh, and exposed to the troubles of life, he may at least each seventh day recollect, and give himself up to far preferable thoughts, and then cheerfully, on account of that part of the worship of God which cannot be performed without disengaging from business, abstain from the work of his hands, and from seeking, preparing, and gathering the fruits of the earth. Close quote. And as this celebrated expositor approves of this, I know not why he should disapprove the elegant observation of Chrysostom, noticing at Hebrews subsection 13 that, quote, hence, as by certain preludes, God hath enigmatically taught us to consecrate and set apart for spiritual employment each seventh day in the week. Close quote. If we all agree, as I hope we may, in these positions, which seem not unhappily to explain the nature of that first Sabbath, I truly reckon that a way is paved, and a great deal done to compose those unhappy disputes about the Sabbath of the Decalogue, which for some years past have made such noise in the Dutch universities and churches. Subsection 13. Having thus explained the nature of the first Sabbath, we proceed to inquire into its spiritual and mystical signification, from whence it shall be easy to conclude that we have not improperly called it a sacrament, or, which is the same, a sacred sign or seal. For, why should we wrangle about a word, not scriptural, when we agree about the thing? Of the promises of salvation made by God to Adam. We have Paul's authority to assert that the Sabbath had some mystical meaning, and respected an eternal and happy rest, as Hebrews chapter 4, verse 4 and 10. And this is justly supposed by the Apostle as a thing well known to the Hebrews, and which is a cornerstone or fundamental point with their doctors. It was a common proverb quoted by Buxtorf in Latin for Legio Hebraeo on page 299 that, quote, the Sabbath is not given but to be a type of the life to come, close quote. To the same purpose is that which we have in Zohar on Genesis, although these are abbreviated words, which therefore, not being familiar with them, I cannot give fully their meaning. Genesis, following chapter 5, chapter 15, or book 5, chapter 15, quote, what is the Sabbath day? Remember, we're quoting from Zohar. Quote, what is the Sabbath day? A type of the land of the living, which is the world to come, the world of souls, the world of consolations. Close quote. These things, indeed, are not improper to be said in general, but as you will not readily find anywhere or in other authors, the analogy between the Sabbath and eternal rest specifically assigned, can it be thought improper if by distinguishing between the rest of God, the rest of man, and the Sabbath day, on which both rested, we should distinctly propose the mystical meaning of each? Subsection 14. The rest of God from the work of the creation was a type of a far more glorious rest of God from the work of the glorification of the whole universe. When God had created the first world, so as to be a commodious habitation for man during his probation, and an illustrious theater of the perfections of the Creator, he took pleasure in this his work, and rested with delight, for he bestowed upon it all the perfection which was requisite to complete that state. But he had resolved one day to produce a far more perfect universe, and by dissolving the elements by fire, to raise a new heaven and a new earth, as it were, out of the ashes of the old, which new world, being blessed with his immutable happiness, was to be a far more august habitation for his glorified creatures, in which, as in the last display of his perfections, he was forever to rest with the greatest complacency. And besides, as God, according to his infinite wisdom, so very wisely connects all his actions, that the preceding have a certain respect to the following. In like manner, since that rest of God after creation was less complete than that other, when God shall have concluded the whole, and which is to be followed by no other labor or toil, it is proper to consider that first rest of God as a type, and a kind of prelude of that other, which is more perfect. And fine, because it tends to man's greatest happiness, that the whole universe be thus glorified, and himself in the universe, that God may altogether rest in him, as having now obtained his last degree of perfection, he is said to, quote, to enter into the rest of God, close quote, in Hebrews chapter 4, verse 10. Subsection 15. This rest of God was after the creation, immediately succeeded by the rest of man. For, when he had formed man on the sixth day, as possibly may be gathered from the simplicity of Moses' narrative, he had brought him into paradise on the seventh day, and put him, or, as others think, the words may be translated, quote, he made him rest in the Garden of Eden, close quote. See Genesis chapter 2, verse 15. Was not this a most delightful symbol or sign to Adam, that after having finished his course of labor on this earth, he should be translated from thence into a place far more pleasant, and to a rest far more delightful than that which he enjoyed in paradise? And when at certain times he ceased from tilling the ground in paradise, and gave himself wholly up to the religious worship of God, with a soul delighting in God, was not this a certain earnest and prelibation to him of that time, in which, exempted from all other care about this animal life, he should immediately delight himself in the intimate communication of God, in being joined with the choirs of angels, and in doing the works of angels? Subsection 16. May not this rest both of God and man, falling upon the seventh day, after the sixth of creation, properly denote that the rest of the glory of God is then to be expected, after the week of this world is elapsed, and that man is not to enter into rest till he has finished his course of probation, and God, upon strictly examining by the rule of his law, finds it complete and in every respect perfect? And are we to reject the learned observation of Peter Martyr, that, quote, this seventh day is said to have rested morning, said to have neither morning nor evening, because this is a perpetual rest to those who are truly the sons of God, close quote. Subsection 17. It is indeed true that upon Adam's sin and violation of the covenant of works, the whole face of things were changed, but all these things as we have been speaking of were such as might have been signified and sealed by this Sabbath to Adam, even in the state of innocence. And why might it not really have been so? For the Apostle expressly declares that, quote, God's resting from his works from the foundation of the world, end quote, Hebrews chapter 4, verse 3, had a mystical signification, It is therefore our business to find out the agreement between the sign and the thing signified. For the greater analogy we observe between them, we shall the more clearly and with joy discover the infinite wisdom and goodness of God, in various ways manifesting themselves. It cannot but tend to the praise of the divine architect if we can observe many excellent resemblances between the picture given us by himself and the copy. Indeed, I deny not that Paul, when discoursing of the Sabbath, leads us to that rest purchased for believers by the sufferings of Christ. But it cannot thence be inferred that after the entrance of sin, God's Sabbath barred all its mystical signification from the covenant of grace. For, as to the substance of the thing, the glorious rest promised by the covenant of works, and now to be obtained by the covenant of grace, is one and the same, consisting in a blessed acquiescence, or rest, of the soul in God. As this was sealed to man in innocence by the Sabbath, under the covenant of works, so likewise it is sealed by the Sabbath, under the covenant of grace, though under another relation, and under other circumstances. For God, having perfect knowledge that man would not continue in the first covenant, had from all eternity decreed to set on foot a quite different order of things, and bring his elect by a new covenant of grace to the most peaceful rest. Accordingly, he settled in his unsearchable wisdom whatever preceded the fall, in such a manner that man, viewing them after the fall with the enlightened eyes of faith, might discover still greater mysteries to them, which regarded Christ and the glory to be attained by him. But we are not to speak of this here. Therefore, whoever desires a learned explanation of these mysteries, may consult Mestresat's sermons on the fourth chapter of the Hebrews. Subsection 18. This Sabbath also put man in mind of various duties to be performed by him, which, having pointed out above in section 10 and 11, I think needless to repeat now. And thus we have executed what we promised concerning the sacraments of the covenant of works. Subsection 19. And here I might conclude, did not a very learned man come in my way, whose thoughts on the first Sabbath, being widely different from the commonly received notions, I intend, with his permission, calmly to examine. He therefore maintains that Adam, on the very day of his creation, being seduced by the devil, had involved himself and the whole world in the most wretched bondage of corruption, but that God on the seventh day restored all things thus corrupted by the devil and by man, by his gracious promise of the Messiah. Upon this restoration, he rested on that very day, and that rest, upon the preparation of the world, being peculiar to the seventh day, may be the foundation of the Sabbath. Doubtless, quote, on the sixth day the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them, close quote, Genesis 2 and 1. And God, beholding the works of his creation so perfect, pleasantly rested in them. This was the rest of the sixth day. But on the same day, Satan corrupted all. For, upon losing heaven, of whose host he was one, and which he greatly diminished by associating many other angels to himself, and so far rendered that habitation a desert, and on earth, by means of a calumnious lie, he rendered man, the prince of the terrestrial host, a subject to himself, a rebel to God, and destitute of life. This was the corruption of the earth, and thus heaven and earth, so beautifully finished by God on the sixth day, were on the same basely defiled by Satan and by man. This occasioned God to be engaged in a new work on the seventh day, even to restore what had been thus defiled and corrupted, and to complete them anew, which he did on the seventh day, when the Mediator, the God-man, was revealed by the Gospel, whom, in this promise, he appointed to triumph over Satan, the corrupter of all, and so to restore all things, both of the earth, where he began the restoration, by delivering the elect of mankind from the bondage of corruption, and of heaven, by bringing the same chosen people into the heavenly habitation, in order to its being again repeopled with that colony of new inhabitants. In this manner, he will complete the restoration, which completion Moses estimates in verse 2, quote, "And on the seventh day God ended his work, which he had made," close quote. This finishing of the restoration, signified in verse 3 by the word made, is very distinct from the finishing of the creation, mentioned in verse 1. When God had done all this, upon giving his Son to men for a mediator and redeemer, he himself rested in this his last work, as this is, quote, "the man of his delight," close quote, in Isaiah chapter 42, verse 1. And this rest was the only foundation for instituting the Sabbath. This institution consists of a twofold act. The first is a blessing, by which God blessed that very day, by a most distinguishing privilege, to read the day devoted to the Messiah, who was revealed in it by the gospel. For this is the honor of the Sabbath, that it is, quote, "the delight, on account of the holy of the Lord being glorified," close quote, in Isaiah chapter 58, verse 13. The other act is that of sanctification, by which he set it apart for a sign and a memorial of that benefit, because through and for the holy of the Lord, he chooses to sanctify the elect. This is the sum of that opinion. Let us now consider whether it be solid and can be proved by Scripture. Subsection 20. The whole foundation of this opinion is that Adam fell on the very day in which he was created, which the Scripture nowhere says. I know that some Jewish doctors, with boldness, as this is their way, assert this, and, as if they were perfectly acquainted with what God was about every hour, declare that man was created the third hour of the day, fell the 11th, and was expelled from paradise on the 12th. But this rashness is to be treated with indignation. The learned person deems it his glory to be wise from the Scriptures alone, and justly, for thus it becomes the divine. But what portion of Scripture determines anything about the first sin? We have here scarce any more than bare conjectures, which at best are too sandy a foundation on which any wise architect will ever presume to build so grand an edifice. Subsection 21. Nay, there are many things from which we rather incline to think that man's sin happened not on the sixth day. For it was after God had on the seventh day created the beast, after he had formed Adam of the dust of the earth, after he had prescribed him the law concerning the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, after he had presented to him the beast in paradise, that, upon inquiring into the nature of each, which also he performed with great accuracy, as the great Bocart has profoundly learned, in Hyserosophies, Liber chapter 1, chapter 9, he might call each by their proper names, after Adam had found there was not among them any help meet for him, for the purposes and convenience of marriage, and after God had cast Adam into a deep sleep, and then at last formed Eve from one of his ribs. All these things are not of a nature to be performed like the other works of the preceding days, in the shortest space of time possible, and as it were, in a moment, but succeeded one another in distinct periods, and during these, several things must have been done by Adam himself. Nay, there are divines of no small note who insist that these things were not all done in one day, and others postponed the creation of Eve to one of the days of the following week. But we do not now engage in these disputes. After all these things, the world was yet innocent and free from all guilt, at least on the part of man, and God, contemplating his works, and concluding his day, approved of all as very good and beautiful. He had yet no new labor for restoring the fallen world, which would have been no ways inferior to the work of the creation. But what probability is there that in those very few hours which remained, if yet a single hour remained, Adam should have parted from Eve, who had been just created, exposed his most beloved consort to an insidious serpent, and that both of them, just from the hands of the Creator, should so suddenly have given ear to the deceiver? Unless one is prepossessed in favor of the contrary opinion, what reason could he have, notwithstanding so many probabilities to the contrary, prematurely thus to hurry on Adam's sin? Since, therefore, the whole of this foundation is so very weak, what solid superstructure can we imagine that it is capable of? Subsection 22. Let us now take a nearer view of the superstructure itself, and examine whether its construction be sufficiently firm and compact. The very learned person imagines he sees a new labor, or work on the seventh day, and a new rest succeeding that labor, or work on the seventh day, which is the foundation of the Sabbath. The labor was a promise of the Messiah, by which the world, miserably polluted with sin, was to be restored, and that Moses treats on this in chapter 2, verse 2, quote, "And on the seventh day God ended his work, which he had made," close quote. The rest was the satisfaction and delight he had in that promise, and in the Messiah promised. But let us offer the following considerations in opposition to this sentiment. First, if God, on the seventh day, performed the immense work of recovering the world from the fall, a work which, if not greater, yet certainly is not less than the creation of the world out of nothing, and he was again to rest when he had finished it, certainly then the seventh day was as much a day of work to God as no more a Sabbath or day of rest than any of the preceding days. For God, having finished the work of each day, rested for a while and delighted in it. Secondly, Moses, in the second verse, makes use of the same word by which he had expressed the finishing of the world in the first. But the finishing in the first verse, as the learned person himself owns, relates to the finishing of the creation. What necessity, then, can there be for giving such different senses to one and the same word, in the same context, when there is not the least mark of a distinction? Thirdly, hitherto Moses has not given the least imaginable hint of the fall of our first parents. Is it then probable that he would so abruptly mention the restitution of the world from the fall, and that in the very same words which he had just used, and was afterwards to use for explaining the first creation? What can oblige, or who can suffer us to confound the neatness of Moses' method, and the perspicuity of his words, by this feigned irregularity and ambiguity. Fourthly, it may be doubted whether we can properly say that by the promise of the Messiah all things were perfected and finished, since God, if we follow the thread of Moses' narrative, did, after his promise, punish the world with a deserved curse, and the apostle still says of the world that, quote, "The creature was made subject to vanity, and groans under the bondage of corruption," close quote, in Romans chapter 8, verse 20 and 21. It is indeed true that the promise of the Messiah, which could not be frustrated, was the foundation of the comfort of the fathers. But the Scripture nowhere declares that by this promise, and immediately after, made after the fall, all things were finished. Nay, even this promise pointed out that person, who after many ages, and by various acts, not of one in the same office, was to effect the true consummation. Subsection 23. Our learned author urges the following reasons why those two finishings are not to be looked upon as the same. First, it would be a tautology, if not an inexcutable datology, or idle repetition, in such a compendious narrative, and neither the first verse or the beginning of the second would be superfluous. Secondly, the finishing or ending of verse 2 is annexed to the seventh day by a double article in the same manner as "the rest is." Quote, "And on the very seventh day, God ended his work which he had made, and he rested on the very seventh day from all his work which he had made." Close quote. So, that is the former verb, Hebrew, vayakel, be rendered by the pre-to-pluperfect grammatical terminology, and he had ended the latter by Hebrew vayashavat, must be rendered so too, and he had rested. But this is incongruous. Nay, since on the other days we reject the preterpluperfect sense, lest the works of the following day should be referred to those of the preceding, contrary to historical truth. It ought not then here to be admitted on the seventh day. Thirdly, when the third verse shows the cause of this rest, it speaks of distinct finishings, the latter of which is that of the seventh day. Quote, "And God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because that in it he had rested from all his work, which God," quote, Hebrew, bara, "created and made," close quote. By two verbs, he describes two actions. Hebrew, bara, denotes to create, and asa, to adorn or to polish. These words are frequently of the same import, yet when joined together they are to be distinguished, as is owned not only by Christian, but by Jewish interpreters. Thus it is in Isaiah chapter 43, verse 7, where another word is added, in Hebrew, yatzar, or to form, and as to all the three, in Hebrew, bara, certainly signifies the creation of the soul, but Hebrew, yatzar, the formation of the body, and Hebrew, esa, reformation by grace. But these two actions are so described that Hebrew, asa, making, immediately precedes resting, and was the work of the seventh day. But Hebrew, bara, creation, the work of the six preceding days. Fourthly, for the same purpose is the recapitulation of verse 4, which repeats and confirms the distinction just now mentioned. Quote, "These are the generations of the heavens and of the earth, and they were created, in the day that the ever-living God made the heavens and the earth." Close quote. Thus he recites the generations, both of the first 6 days, in which the heavens and the earth, with their respective hosts, were created, and of the beginning of that one day, namely, the seventh, which is that of operation, in which he made polished, inverting the order, first the earth, then the heavens. Thus far, our very learned author. This Reformation audio resource is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. Many free resources, as well as our complete mail order catalog, containing classic and contemporary Puritan and Reformed books, CDs, and much more at great discounts, are on the web at www.swrb.com. We can also be reached by email at swrb@swrb.com, by phone at 780-450-3730, by fax at 780-468-1096, or by mail at 4710-37A Avenue, Edmonton, AB, Canada, T6L3T5. If you do not have a web connection, please request a free printed catalog. If you do have a web connection and would like to be added to our email list, please send an email to ad@swrb.com or swrb@swrb.com with the word add in the subject line. SWRB's email list is a double opt-in list, so once you've sent us your email address, you will be asked by email to confirm that you want to join our list using the email address you have supplied. Your email information will be kept confidential, and you can easily remove yourself from our email list by simply emailing us at swrb@swrb.com with the word remove in the subject line. Once you are on our email list, you will be alerted to all the free Reformation resources, free MP3s and free electronic books and text, etc. SWRB makes available on the web, as well as at times to our special discounts and super specials. We also encourage you to reproduce this audio resource and pass it on to your friends, but we only authorize this as long as the full contents of the message, including the header and trailer, is not altered in any way, and as long as the audio file or cassette is given away for free. Thank you again for listening to this SWRB reading, and remember that Isaiah 26:3 states, "Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee, because he trusteth in thee." And 2 Corinthians 13:11 concludes, "Finally, brethren, farewell. Be perfect. Be of good comfort. Be of one mind. Live in peace. And the God of love and peace shall be with you."